For the latest news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring the Boston Bash Brigade, visit our website at www.b3crew.com.
Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/BostonBash Brigade. Follow us on Twitter under our respective pen names.
And don't forget to check out the rest of the Land of Esh programming, including the Electric Sisterhood, Geek Aggro, and the Issues program.
Hi, this is Matt the Band, and you're listening to the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Joining us today on One on One is a musical duo straight out of Providence, Rhode Island. They are gearing up for a major U.S. tour in support of their upcoming album, Get Real, which will be available in stores everywhere November 20th. It is a great pleasure to welcome the wildly entertaining Matt the Band. Welcome to the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Thank you. Hi. How's it going?
It's going very good. How about you?
Doing great.
So, how did you become this power duo of sorts? I know Justine joined Duke Heaven back in 2007, so what was it that made you want to recruit her?
I started the band when I was like 12 or 13 years old, and throughout the whole time it had been, you know, like me and like just who was around and things like that. And when Justine started playing with us, we had, you know, started dating, I think maybe like a year before, and we put together, I think, one of the biggest bands that we had at a point, which was like five people. Oh, and wow. She was just she was the one that cut the mustard, and, you know,
I'm the last man standing.
Yeah, last man standing. That's right.
Nice.
And we still do, like, we have it kind of goes toward a tour. I like having a drummer. A lot of times we have you know, either like a full kit drummer or like standing up, like Blue Man Group style drummers, or, you know, sometimes we've had horn sections at shows or things like that. I don't really think of ourselves as like a two-piece band, but that's just how it usually is.
Correct. Kind of like how Eagles of Death Metal are like Jesse Hughes and Joshua Hame, but they have like other session people and people on tour with them.
Right.
So your sound is like a blend of such artists as Matt and Kim, Polly Six, and Andrew WK, all of whom you've actually wound up sharing the stage with during your lengthy career.
Yeah.
Would you say some of these artists have influenced you in some way, shape, or form?
Of those that you just listed, I would say Andrew WK more than the others. Okay. But we've been very fortunate, actually extremely fortunate. If you ask me to, you know, make a list of the bands that we would like to play with, if you gave me like ask me to make like a top 10 list, I'd say like 9 out of 10 of the bands we would love to play with, we have.
Nice.
So I consider ourselves extremely fortunate.
So who is the band you haven't played with that would be on that top 10 list?
You know, I would love to play with Devo.
Oh, I thought you guys did play with Devo or at like some sort of festival.
Nope, we've never played with Devo. However, here's kind of a funny thing. For 2 years in a row, like, we're a band, and bands do Halloween shows, obviously. And 2 years in a row, Justine and I dressed up like Andrew WK for Halloween. This is before we'd ever played with him or met him or anything like that. And then on the third year, we got asked to do a two-month national tour with Andrew WK. Mm-hmm. So, this Halloween, I'm being Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo for Halloween. So we'll see what happens 2 years from now.
Ooh. So it's kind of like a lucky costume of sorts.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
So, Justine, maybe you can dress up as, like, I don't know, Bruce Springsteen or something, and 2 years from now you guys will be touring with the E Street Band.
Well, you see, I'm being a cat because I want to turn into a cat. So, yeah.
I want to tour with the Jingle Cats.
I want to be in the musical Cats.
Yep.
So I'll be a cat.
Ooh, so maybe Andrew Lloyd Webber will listen to your music and go, let's make a musical out of it.
Exactly.
Yep.
So seeing as on the Boston Bash Brigade, we review a lot of video games on our site. So I have to ask, how big of a gamer are you both?
To be completely honest, I have a large collection of like cartridge video games. That's kind of where like I keep my gaming experience mostly. And to be honest, I haven't had much of any time for video games over the past couple of years. It's something where if I have free time, I sit down in the studio and I write music. And I love playing video games so much, but it's something that I know it consumes so much of my time that I'm kind of shelving that interest of mine until we're done touring and being such an active band.
Okay. So when you say cartridges, are you talking like
Super Nintendo, NES, N64, Game Boy?
Okay.
Nintendo cartridges. I have a small collection of Sega 2 and, you know, some Commodore 64 carts as well.
And speaking of Commodore 64, you have a Commodore 64 that's been remade into a synthesizer.
Yes. Well, I have a synthesizer that I built that you kind of harvest the sound chips from Commodore 64 systems, remove them, and then place them into this box, and you just use it as a standalone synthesizer. And I have, I think I have about 13 of those in my apartment right now of just, you know, the faded remains of Commodore 64 systems. Awesome. And one fully functional one as well. One fully functional.
Ah, very cool. Very cool. So these past few years, we've seen a huge nerdcore boom in many of our musical genres. How do you feel about its portrayal right now in our music industry?
I don't know. You know, I guess I'm buddies with a lot of the
front runners
of the genre. You know, we've toured with MC Chris, we've toured with MC Front a lot, we've toured with MC Lars. They're all buddies of mine, and I don't know. It's definitely popular. I feel like it's a little bit dangerous sometimes to classify a genre of music based on the subject matter, however.
Yeah, that's kind of true.
I feel like that can at times be damaging to the longevity of a project. And I feel like, you know, all of those artists that I just mentioned, you know, they're the best. I have the utmost complete respect for them, and you know, I just hope for continued success, and hope that the popularity of the genre doesn't lead it to be overly novelized, I guess, you know. Mm-hmm. and that, you know, just the life of it can continue.
Absolutely. I mean, you've mentioned MC Front a lot. The artists like Anna Monoguchi and Proto Men. These are just
also friends of ours. Yeah, best. Awesome.
Yes, they're fantastic. I think many people like to put that whole nerdcore label onto them because it's sort of like a separate genre unto itself. Because mm-hmm. it you can't really categorize it sometimes as rock or metal. Sometimes you can, kind of like with Metroid Metal and a few of the other bands out there that would like play at PAX East. But I feel like if you add that sort of Nordcore label to it, it makes it just a little bit more special to it, in my honest opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Before we started the interview, I quickly mentioned about the live shows and you two doing such a fantastic job with getting the crowd going and both of you like bouncing around the stage with high energy, even on occasion showing your limberness of sorts.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Is there a sort of physical training regimen that you two follow before you both hit the road, or does it just all come naturally?
Well, we go to the gym and we actually sprint for the length of our set, a few times a week. Just to get, you know, our lung capacity up, and because it's difficult to be exercising for, you know, 45 minutes at a time while also singing, you know, it's pretty demanding. So that and stretching, you know, just are probably the two things that we do faithfully and are pretty important.
When you're on the road, do you still keep to that regimen, or do you have to, like,
do something different? We don't do the cardio, but we both stretch every day. Pretty much for 20 minutes before the set, both of us can be found somewhere within 50 yards of the venue stretching.
and yeah, I mean, doing the sprinting for a half hour a day kind of just gets replaced by playing a set when we're on tour. So it kind of, you know, your body stays used to, you know, a half hour to 45 minutes of physical activity every day.
So if someone were to come up to you, and this would be like the sort of advice you would give to bands, if they want to have a good workout regimen on the road, this is what you would tell them?
Yeah, I absolutely would. It's easy to get sick or injured or, you know, otherwise worn down on tour, and keeping yourself in good shape, you know, helps that.
It's also just, it's such a nice, like, stretching makes you release endorphins, so it puts you in a better mood. And like before a set, it's really nice to like go on stage in a really nice mood. And yeah, it feels good. Yes. So it's kind of a no brainer. It's what we need to do.
Excellent. So you've played all over America. You've played in Mexico, Canada, and even parts of the United Kingdom. Do you see any sort of cultural difference in the audience of each country, or do you find their reaction to you two or whoever is joining you on the band being identical to one another?
You know, I think that's kind of really hard to put my finger on, because the situations when we've been touring in these different countries have all been so different. When we're touring in the United States, it's a lot of like punk clubs or DIY warehouses or basements or things like that. But our experience touring in the UK has been solely limited to opening up for, I don't know if you remember the like early 2000s band Wheatus. They had that song Teenage Dirtbag.
Yep, I remember them.
So that, like, all of our experience touring overseas has been opening for that band. So you can imagine there's a completely different demographic that would be at those shows than would be, you know, at a regular all ages punk show here in the United States.
Right. That's kind of true.
Right.
It really varies night to night. And it's also like not all of the United States is the same. It's really regionalized. Like certain areas are more into dancing. Certain areas are more into watching. It all varies.
Yeah. I'd say that there's not any much more of a difference than it would be that there is city to city here in the US.
Yeah.
However, in Mexico, there was a big difference there.
How was it different?
There's always a note of like something exotic when a band is from somewhere far away enough that, you know, it's even like a language barrier type thing, you know? Mm-hmm. I feel like people pay attention a little bit more, are more willing to get into something even if they, you know, might not have heard the band before or anything like that. If, you know, they realize like, hey, this band, you know, they've traveled 5,000 miles to be here. You know, it's the same thing where like I live in Providence. If I notice that there's a band coming from, say, you know, Japan or South America or something, if they're playing in town, I won't even, you know, bother looking up what they sound like. I'll go give them a shot because, you know what, if they came all the way here, then, you know, I've got respect for that. I'll go check it out.
Absolutely. And I totally agree with you. I remember back for many years in Cambridge, we had the Japan Night concerts that were held by the South by Southwest Festival. Right. And just droves of people would come to this event,
right,
not knowing what to expect from these bands, but they came just because they were from Japan.
Right. There's a level of interest for foreign music. And it's not quite the same. You know, you go to Canada, that's not foreign. You go to the UK even, and it's not quite that. There's not that many differences between our countries, you know, in some respects. But going to Mexico, it was definitely something different.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So speaking of Japanese bands, one of the bands you formed a great bond with over the years is P-Lander Z.
Yes.
Even going so far as to help him out on their recent album, Space Vacation.
That's right.
So where and when did this friendship originate?
It originated at the Middle East.
Really?
Here's what had happened. We, I forget how exactly it came about, but we had gotten asked to play at the Middle East, and P-Lander Z was playing too. And I'd never seen them or heard them before, but I'd heard, you know, I knew what they were all about, and it seemed, you know, like a lot of fun. It was very interesting. Mm-hmm. So we were excited to play the show. And at that show, I guess, Pelander Yellow wasn't at the venue when we played, but Pelander Green and Red were. And they told Pelander Yellow that, you know, he really should have seen us and that they think that he would like us. So when they got home from tour, Pelander Yellow actually, he didn't tell us this, but he booked a show in New York City where they live, mm-hmm. And invited us to play just kind of to give us a tryout. We didn't know what it was. He just asked us to play a show. So, you know, we came down and we did it. And after the show, he was like, hey, you know, like that was really good. I wanted to like, I missed your set in Boston. So I wanted to bring you down and I liked it. So let's go on tour.
Oh, wow.
So it was kind of like a tryout for a tour. And they invited us to go on tour with them. We did like the Midwest. And we did, you know, like 2 weeks with them. And ever since we've had a really strong friendly relationship. We see them whenever we're in New York. Like you said, we did sound effects and voiceover on their newest album, Space Vacation.
I believe it's on the intro and outro, correct?
Yes, yes. I did my best Rod Sterling impression. And they came to our studio and I got on my analog synthesizers and they were like, yeah, make it sound like outer space. And I was like, oh, what does outer space sound like? So, you know, we just spent an afternoon playing around, making different sounds, talking about outer space, regular stuff, you know.
Awesome. Do you two enjoy being on the tour with them again this time around?
We didn't go on tour. Well, I guess we did. Yeah, we did.
I know you did a few shows with them.
Yeah, we did a few shows with them, and yeah, absolutely, it's always a great time playing with Pelander Z. You know, they really know what they're doing. They really know how to get a crowd going and how to just make a night fun and special and memorable. And it's always a good time with Pelander Z.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So you two are on the verge of releasing Get Real.
Yes.
So how did you approach the recording of this new album, and was it a different experience from when you created Don't Worry or Math the Band, Band the Math?
Very, very different. Well, on the previous albums, I started, especially with Math the Band, Band the Math, it was 100% made on a laptop. And since that album, which was like 5 or 6 years ago at this point, I've been gradually replacing things one by one from software to hardware. So on this newest album, it wasn't, you know, synthesizers inside of a computer. It was a computer controlling real drum machines or a computer controlling, you know, vintage analog synthesizers and things like that. So just from that standpoint, it's a very different approach. It was also the first time that we worked with anyone else in terms of mixing or mastering or things like that. We worked with the producer Josh Hager, who used to play in the band The Rentals, and he actually worked as one of the people producing Devo's newest album too.
Huh.
So
that brings you one step closer to them,
right?
We're trying,
right.
Man.
Control your own destiny. That's right.
Yes.
So. We recorded the album in the basement here at the nonprofit AS220 that we live at. So, you know, we recorded all the vocals and guitar and the synthesizers and everything. And then we brought all of those pieces to Josh Hager, and we spent a good 5 or 6 months working with him, deconstructing it, putting it back together. And it's a lot more thorough than we have been in our last albums. And I'm really, really proud of it and excited for people to hear it.
You once said that you, quote, feel like you need to make 1,000 bad songs for every good song.
Oh, absolutely.
You did your homework.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you can tell by how many bad songs we have.
I wouldn't say that.
We're hoping to have a good one any day now. Hey.
Did you have to do the same for Get Real, or did you find the songwriting process was a little bit easier this time around?
No.
There's a lot of
there's a lot of terrible songs in that album. I can stand by that. No, actually, here's the thing. I wrote that album, and then my computer got a virus that made it reformat its own hard drive.
Ooh.
So I lost everything, and then I recorded on a cassette tape myself humming all the melodies I could remember instantly. When it got erased, I was like, oh shit, like, you know, crunch time, hummed out everything that I could. And then I thought to myself, no, I'm going to just start it from scratch. So I made that album twice, completely differently both times. It's 16 tracks, and I wrote, I think, like 54 tracks. Probably to get to this 16-track album, I probably had about 100 songs to come down to that.
Ooh, very cool. Did any of the songs that started off initially as bad evolve into something much grander?
Sometimes. Because I try and work on music every single day. And sometimes if I'm just not feeling inspired, I'll spend hours just going through and listening to little clips that I had started and, you know, told myself, no, that's no good. I'll just go back and, you know, just listen to all these tiny little clips. And sometimes I'll be surprised, be like, wow, why did I, you know, throw that away? That was actually really good. And I'll, you know, go back and revisit and expand it and things like that. Everybody has bad ideas. It's just important to keep coming up with ideas no matter what.
Right, because it's sort of like you got to practice from time to time with your songwriting and such, and the more you practice, the better you get at it.
Right, exactly. And the important thing is to not accept writer's block. You know, just completely deny writer's block and just say, well, you know what, if I'm not feeling too inspired, then maybe I'm just going to write bad songs today, and that's fine.
So just walk around the wall.
Right, yeah. Don't accept that there is a wall. Just keep walking straight into it until you're on the other side.
Mm. Yeah, I'm looking at your track list right now for Get Real. I remember some of the songs you played over at the Middle East show. I remember you played I Hope You Die and yeah. 4 to 6. Like, which of these songs that you played off of Get Real in concert have you seen the fans warming up to the most?
I don't know. I've been playing a lot of them for a really long time. But yeah. 4 to 6 was one. You know, it has a repeating chorus, so people like that. And, I mean, I Hope You Die. We've been playing that for a really long time. So
over 2 years.
So kids know it. And the new song that we're going to be pushing is Bad Jokes, because that's another one that kids seem to catch on to. But, yeah, it's been really exciting because the fan, you know, Don't Worry came out in 2009, so... some of the fans have been waiting a really long time for Get Real, and they're really, really excited. So it's going to be fun to see how they react to the recordings.
Yeah. And I know you gave a bit of a sneak preview with the EP Best Wishes, Thanks to Dunks.
Yeah.
That's kind of hard to say sometimes.
Yeah.
And you also did a music video for 4 to 6 where you had a guy's head explode into like Chinese noodles or wherever that was.
Yep.
So where did the inspiration for that video come from?
Well, we've been coordinating for the past like year and a half a music video for every song in that album.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes. And that video was made by our friend John Yee, who he made the So Many Mike video for P-Lander Z. Mm-hmm. He actually, you know, has his own HBO special, East of Main Street.
I've actually heard of that, yeah.
Yeah, he is just, he's a genius. So for each one of these videos, we went to like different filmmakers and, you know, just posted around me like, hey, do you want to make a music video for us? We have no budget, but, you know, we'll promote it as much as we can. And John Yee was the first person to get to us. And he had been working for Canon, the camera company. And they had a new camera that they were coming out with. And they came to John and they said, hey, John, we want you to make a video. It can be anything that you want it to be, but just make a video to showcase our new camera, and we'll give you a budget to do that. And John Yee said, oh, well, okay. So now we have a budget for this Math the Band video.
And how did Canon react to this video?
They loved it. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was fantastic. So to be honest, all of the concept of that video is all Johnny and Sam Goetz, the two of them filming and editing team. They came up with everything. They filmed it while we were on tour So we were only able to come by for like 6 hours, the one day where you see the scenes that we're in it.
Yeah.
And the rest of it, they handled entirely on their own. And I cannot express how grateful we were for that. And just those guys are just total geniuses. That video made the hair stand up on my the back of my neck for the first time I saw it. It's just so beautiful.
Yeah, it is like an insanely brilliant video. And it's it's one of those things where you got to wonder, like, what does this mean? What is the symbolism for this? Why is there a bearded dude choking the businessman in the popcorn bath? And why is there a popcorn bath to begin with?
Yeah, we have no answers for
No, you got to talk to John and Sam. Actually, the scene where they had that man's head explode, they actually had to have the New York City Fire Department there to oversee the explosives.
Really?
Yeah, they were legit with that. Absolutely.
Because it looks, I know it's really cool, but it looks just so simple to do.
But just going by the books, if you're having explosives, you have to have like a license. And you have to have, you know, a fire marshal there or whatever. They went completely by the books. Professionals, those two.
Nice. So, yeah. Which other directors have you been able to get in contact with regarding some of these videos that you want to do for Get Real? Or do you want to keep this a secret?
I mean, some of them, you know, secret's out. But we have a couple filmmakers from Providence, John Killoran and Adam Thoreau from Hank Sinatra Jr. We have Eric from Fishboy. He's made us a music video. We have Frank Howley, who's a YouTube sensation. We have Neil Cicerga and Alora from Lemon Demon, who are also internet sensations. We have a lot of impressive filmmakers. I've been... like Kevin said, for a year and a half, we've been reaching out. I've kind of commandeered that project, and it's been a tough one, but we're getting through it. And it's really, really satisfying to see how all of these videos are turning out. I'm just so proud of all of the filmmakers.
Do you plan to release all these videos together in like one DVD package, or do you just plan to just put it all onto like YouTube?
We're just doing YouTube because that's how people get videos nowadays. And like, we also don't want to be selling work that people made for us. That just doesn't make any sense to us. And the whole idea of the music video project is that no matter what, we know our album's going to end up on YouTube for everybody to listen to, but we would like to control the visuals of it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool that people will be able to go onto YouTube and listen to the album and also get a cool music video for each of them. And, you know, it's also kind of a cool way to get people excited about the album is to reveal these videos one by one. And, it will all end up on our YouTube channel and people will be able to watch all of them in one place for free. And we like that idea.
Would you like to reveal what the next video is that's going to be released from the album?
I don't know what it is. it's kind of been a surprise to us too. We're working with different blogs to have them revealed, and it's kind of whatever gets picked up and whatever's appropriate for the week. So, I know that we're going to be trying to get Adam Thoreau's out before the Providence show because he's from Providence and we recorded the video at AS220. So we're going to try to do that the week of November 8th. So, look out for that one.
Awesome. So I know we talked about some of your shows and how extremely energetic and quite visual they are in some places. I know that you said no to a music video DVD, but would you guys ever consider releasing a live DVD or CD in the near future?
Maybe. But probably if we were going to do that, it would probably be more of a free download. I don't know if I would bother going and like printing that. It would definitely just be digital if we did do that. If we were gonna like put it onto a CD or vinyl or anything like that, I think we would just leave that to like studio albums.
Yeah, we like the idea of doing things digitally. It's less waste. It's easier for people to access and share. Yeah.
It also costs us nothing, so you can keep the prices on it really low. We like being able to do like pay what you want when it's viable.
True. That's very cool of you guys. Yeah. It like brings the the fans a little bit closer to the band, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We're in our 20s and we know how hard it is for people right now. So we try to make things affordable or free whenever we can.
Yeah.
Especially like our fans do so much for us that it just makes sense to, you know, be understanding and make things as affordable as you can for them.
Yeah. And that's a very good thought process that you've got there going.
Because, I mean, without them, like, we're not doing anything.
Exactly.
So. Yeah. So, after the upcoming album release, after the tour, and possibly after all the music videos come out, what do you guys see happening next for Math the Band?
Well, I've already started recording our next album.
Oh!
Since we got home from our tour in the UK, when did we get home from that? Like,
June?
So, since June, I've been writing it, and, we have like a good like half hour, 35 minutes of an album done. I actually started recording it today, but I've been writing it for the past few months.
Wow.
Yeah. This album took us longer than I would have liked it to between, you know, my computer reformatting itself and other obstacles that I don't need to list out, but... It was a little frustrating. It should have been able to be out, you know, a year and a half ago instead of it coming out in a month from now. So I'm learning from that, and we're trying to start the album art for it as soon as we can. I'm trying to record everything before we even leave for this upcoming tour so that, you know, it'll just be ready to go, you know, and gotta learn from stuff.
Right.
So, yeah, hopefully you'll be seeing another album from us very, very soon.
Wow, what a way to keep busy there, guys.
Yeah.
All right, the last question, as I ask all the bands I interview, if you were stuck on a deserted island, which three albums would you like to have on you to keep you sane into your imminent rescue, and why?
Oh, boy. Huh.
Okay, do we each pick three, or do we each pick one and a half?
Yeah, you each can pick three.
One and a half. I guess I can go. I would probably do Weezer Pinkerton because that's my favorite. Mm. Like, that's stuck with me through the years. To get me through the party times, I would do Andrew's I Get Wet.
Absolutely.
And when I'm crying because I'm on a desert island, I would probably want the Why Almost Live from Eli's Live Room, which is like a special tour CD they did. And then, yeah.
Some pretty interesting choices there.
Yeah, I wanted, you know, a little bit from everywhere, so I think that's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
What would you do, Bub?
I don't know. I would have to say one of them would be Barcelona 01 Infinity.
Good pick.
Devo's Freedom of Choice.
Good.
Okay, yeah.
And Eels Live from Town Hall.
Ah, that's an interesting one.
Both picked one live. That's interesting.
Well, maybe you guys would like to hear an audience of sorts while you're on the deserted island, or make it sound like there's more people there.
Right.
We play so many shows, it would make us feel like we're at home.
That's pretty cool. So, Get Real comes out November 20th in stores everywhere. Math the Band touring beginning on November 8th. Go onto their website at maththeband.com for more information. Guys, thank you so much, and I hope that the next time you play the Gulu Gulu Cafe, you don't get stopped halfway through your set.
Oh, thank you.